Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter Podcast. I'm your host, Communications and Public Policy Director Tony Heil, and I'm very excited about this latest episode. We are here in Washington, D.C., talking with two people who are helping to make a difference in ALS advocacy. Our advocates do a great job year-round, not just a couple times a year, both nationally here in Washington on Capitol Hill, and on the local level in all of our states. Our chapter does a lot in Harrisburg, in Pennsylvania, Trenton, New Jersey, and Dover, Delaware. But today, we're talking with Ted Harada from the Georgia chapter, and we're thrilled to have Barb Newhouse, president of the ALS Association, joining our podcast to talk about what we're doing nationally to advance our mission to support people with ALS. Thank you, Barb. Thank you, Ted, for joining us.
It's our pleasure.
So I'm sure you've listened to all of our podcasts and you're well up to speed, but
You do a great job with them.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, podcasts are very important because we can reach a whole community that can't always be at these conferences.
So we are here because we have a lot of priorities. And Ted, you've been doing this longer for ALS than Barb has just because you're new to the ALS Association.
Right.
So I'll start with Ted. Tell me a little bit about your background, which I know is exciting for this cause, but let everyone know how long you've been doing this and,
sure.
and why it's important.
Sure, Tony. Well, this is my fourth year coming to Washington, D.C., and I'll come back in May for our advocacy conference.
It'll be my fourth year, too.
That's great.
So
this will be my second year, just in case anybody wants to know.
Absolutely. So I started coming shortly, about a year after I was first diagnosed with ALS. And I tell you what, just everyone told me that when you come and you speak to the representatives and the senators, that it was really empowering. But I didn't understand that until I really came and got in front of the congressional leaders and told them, you know, my story and told them why this was important. You know, so much with ALS, obviously it's a horrid disease, but it's also extremely frustrating because you feel like you're helpless and you can't do much. But here's an opportunity where you actually get to have a huge impact and make a difference. It's a very crucial event that we do. And as you said, it's an annual event, but the association year-round is having an impact on public policy.
Well, I'm really happy that you're able to come here from Georgia for 4 years running. It's not that it's easy for anybody, but I take the train down, but we have people coming from Georgia, from Boston, from Florida, from Hawaii that come, and so it's thrilled.
Well, this year at the this fly-in event, which we call fly-in. So let me just distinguish between the two events that we're talking about. So right now, we're here at the fly-in, which is a grass tops event on the hill, which means that we're actually taking the top advocacy people in each of the chapters. And by the way, all 39 chapters are represented this year at the fly-in, which I think is another little milestone for us.
It's terrific.
And so we get some of our messages out early, and then at the conference in May, that's when we really do the big 1-2 punch, because many of the individuals living with ALS and their families come to the conference in May. So there, it's a little bit of difference. But it reinforces all of the messages that we're trying to get across.
And we do that for a number of reasons. One, because it's a 1-2 punch, and two, because the ALS Association is pretty in tune with the patients. You don't want to tell someone to make a huge trip if they're in a power wheelchair more than they have to. But you also want to make sure that their story is told. So before we go around with what Advocacy Day is, so with the introductions, Barb, tell us a little bit about you started last year. And then a couple weeks later, the Ice Bucket Challenge happened.
Exactly. I started on June 1, and the Ice Bucket Challenge started on July 29th. And I teased the national board members like Ted that I never got a honeymoon, and he informed me I was never getting it back either.
No, normally August is our slow month, I
yeah.
think.
So it's really busy. We've got a lot going on since the Ice Bucket Challenge. And it's, you know, since the Ice Bucket Challenge, I'll tell you that I believe I learned a lot of lessons during that time. I did a lot of listening, and I believe that we are in a very hopeful time for ALS.
I would agree with that. And, you know, I think one of the keys to the Ice Bucket Challenge, obviously it raised money, but I think from a patient perspective, the awareness was just as important because why the disease is no less devastating, I think it made it a little less lonely. because the awareness came out there. And yeah, Barb, you're not getting the honeymoon back. That's definitely not going to happen. And you know, we all view this as Barb does it. You know, we have some high class problems. You know, all of a sudden, all this is thrust upon us, and when they're good problems to have, where how can we best utilize and leverage these funds to make the biggest impact for the ALS community?
Yeah, I think the other thing too, it's really important from lessons learned. Not only did we increase awareness and we increased dollars, but we were able to hear some clear messages from the ALS community. One, cause and cure, very important, but what's most important right now is an effective treatment. So it's caused us to really channel our resources just a bit differently so that we are looking more in the treatment arena and the drug therapy arena. So that was one lesson. The second lesson that we learned, that we heard from the ALS community, is people, check your egos at the door and bring organizations together and collaborate instead of all of the ALS organizations going their own different directions. We need you to come together and collaborate. And the third message was, not only do we want to see the ALS organizations collaborating, but we want to see researchers collaborating to find answers. And what we're seeing is researchers are collaborating, and the other thing that we are doing is the ALS organizations are coming together and starting to take a look at how can we act upon our mutual synergies.
Well, it sounds like from hearing from both of you that one of the key things for our success is not just that we're speaking, but we're making sure people are listening. So much of what Ted's saying and I've experienced in advocacy is that members of Congress and their staff are listening and not just blowing us off, and they do listen. And like you said, the ALS Association's mission really turned into a listening mission throughout a lot of
it. Well, it has, and let me just add that you know, we were very fortunate to have Steve Gleason from the Team Gleason at the State of the Union address, and to be able to actually get going the Steve Gleason Act around speech-generating devices. So that's just an example of a very high-profile individual and his organization, how we can collaborate together around something that's important to all of us. And then we've got the star over here around FDA stuff going on in TED.
And I'll say another great thing, and great point, Barb. On top of that, I think what really is unique about the association and what we're able to do with this new found awareness is we're not starting a ground floor advocacy program. We've had a strong advocacy program. Our advocacy program, public policy program, rivals that of any disease out there. And because of that, we're in now a position, a very strong position, to capitalize on this new awareness because we're not starting it brand new. So when we go out there tomorrow, and again in May, we'll be in a position where, okay, now the awareness is even stronger, but it's not the first time they've seen us. It's not the first time they've heard our story, but now they're attaching that story to the Ice Bucket Challenge phenomenon.
So what do you think about what's happening in the greater Philly region on things that you've heard today in public policy?
Well, I know from listening to everything here, how much, like Ted is saying, that there was a base of support that happened already. I don't know in your area in Georgia how much this is true, but a lot of our local elected officials did the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Sure, absolutely.
Or they had someone that did it. I know one congressman in our area, Scott Perry, we met with him afterwards, and he said, you know, he was a newly elected member. He's like, I never even heard of this before, and someone challenged me, and I did it, and he did a really cool one. So that made a difference. So Scott Perry did it, and Congressman Charlie Dent did it on his personal account, and then a lot of other members of Congress and all of our governors did it, and there was a gubernatorial campaign going on, and both of the candidates did it. So that was really neat. So the awareness made a big difference. A lot of them knew what they were doing. But I think what was good about it was that we weren't just showing the Ice Bucket Challenge. It gave us an opportunity to create videos and stories and let people know, oh, I saw that you noticed that Craig did the Ice Bucket Challenge. You know he lives in your district or your state? And that gave us a doorway. And I think that's something we've always been looking for.
Absolutely. I think that's something we're always looking for, and it's important that all patients and advocates now leverage that relationship that they've, you know, maybe the tension they've gotten, and now that we can't let the momentum from the Ice Bucket Challenge dwindle away, we need to capitalize on that this May when we come to D.C., and I think that's really going to be, you know, a huge opportunity. People might be able to bring a picture along that they had of the ice being dumped on them or whatever the case may be, because their personal story is important to tell when they come in May. Mm-hmm. And I think their IBC story might be fun for them to share as well.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, it's a good entry point asking them if they've done it. And it's a good reason to get in touch with members of Congress and other legislators all year round, really. Obviously, the Ice Bucket Challenge happened in August. No reason to wait and to not talk about it after May, too.
Yep.
That's true. I think, though, that what we want people to understand is while the Ice Bucket Challenge produced a lot of awareness and a lot of money, it still is not enough money to handle the research into drug development that we need.
Well said, Barb. Well said. And it's important that we stress that to the legislatures as well, both at a state level, a federal level. I mean, it's well known now that the typical drug development for a disease like ALS, but it could be cancer, it could be Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you know, typically it's going to be between $1 and $2 billion with a 10 to 15 year pipeline. So certainly why the question may be asked, wow, $115 million, that's a lot of money. You know, we're very appreciative and we're very grateful for that, everyone's support. And that's great. But in the big scheme of thing, to getting a cure, it's the proverbial drop in the bucket. So we need to keep going and keep pushing, and we can't just be satisfied with this. We need to really leverage it, as I said, a springboard to bigger and better things.
Well, I'm sure you know that if someone had come to the ALS Association a few years ago and said, you know, if you just had $100 million, you would have a cure tomorrow, we would have raised it within a few weeks.
Absolutely.
Because people have been so dedicated to getting it done. But that's not the case. Like, we were just learning today about it taking over $1 billion to get a drug on the ground.
Sure.
So, you know, you can't just say it's one price tag. And plus, it's not just about the money. There's the speech-generating device issue, which we were talking about today. So, Ted or Barb, can you talk about that issue? Because you said Steve Gleason's really involved, which is important because he uses the technology.
Yeah. So, as we all know, or hopefully most of you know, unfortunately, many people, especially if they've had bulbar onset, they begin to lose their voice. And eventually, they lose their total ability to speak. And that communication, when you take that away from a patient, whether speaking to a loved one or my goodness, when you're communicating with your healthcare provider, it's so impactful. When you lose that, I mean, it's a sense of yourself and a sense of your own identity as well. So the speech generating device issue is unfortunately due to some regulations in Medicare. Basically, there were some changes that said they're going to put inpatient and outpatient dollars into different buckets. And if you had gotten a SGD, speech-generating device, as an outpatient, and it was given to you as part of their, before they used to purchase it for you, but now they're going to do a 14-month cap lease for you. And if during that 14 months, that lease payment is going to be part of their outpatient bucket costs. And then if during that time you had to go into the hospital for who knows what, maybe because you got pneumonia, or maybe because you had to have something else, another procedure relating to ALS, or you went into hospice, that's now considered inpatient, which is a totally different bucket of cost. So if they're 4 months into a 13-month cap rental, that's not paid for, and they're going to say, okay, well, this month or however long you're in a hospital or hospice for, that belongs into a in-bucket cost. And so what could happen, potentially happen, is patients could have that speech-generating device taken away with the expectation that a hospital or hospice will provide one. Except we know that doesn't happen. They don't do that. They don't provide them. In addition, most likely that patient has spent dozens of hours personalizing that machine. Nowadays, many of our personalizing it with their own voice. So when they're using it, it's their voice telling their spouse and children, I love you. When they're laughing, it's their laugh that's communicating to them. And when they're telling their doctor what they want, it's their voice on that device explaining to the doctor what their wishes are. And when you take that away, it'd be the equivalent of taking away a fitted prosthetic limb for someone that's been made specifically for that person and saying, here, put this generic one on. It's not going to work the same way. It's not fair, and it's quite frankly, cruel.
And so the Steve Gleason Act will help change that capped rental rule so that you don't lose your device. You can own it, and also it'll help unlock devices. Because right now Medicare is wanting to say, well, if it connects to the internet, you should lock that. And in our previous podcast with Elisa Brownlee, which you can download on our website and find on iTunes at ALS Philadelphia, we're talking about how essential the internet is to people with ALS.
Oh, absolutely.
Even for minor things, because if you're a person with ALS and you use an iPad to talk and you go to the bathroom, you need help. You could be using the internet literally to contact your caregiver two rooms away.
Yeah. Well, the issue here is technology moves so fast, much faster than these regulations have moved. So these regulations really go back before much of the technology that most patients use today. And the internet is a perfect interface for ALS patients. You know, they can get online and they can, you know, do their social media and communicate with family and friends from whether it's next door or across the country. It's a great format for them to do that. And they can get information about their treatments, et cetera. But as you said, currently, even at their own cost, patients are willing to pay out of their own pocket to access the rest of the options on these devices, to use the internet, et cetera. But currently, as the rule stands right now, that's not an option for them out of their own pocket to pay to access the other options on this device. And so as you said so well, Tony, and you, Barb, as well, that the Steve Gleason Act would not only change the capped rental and put it back to a purchase, because once you purchase it for the patient, they own it, and it can go with them from hospital to home, hospice to home, whatever, but it would also open up the opportunity for them to access the internet and other options that's on the device. So I think it's a no-brainer.
So one of our top priorities is the Steve Gleason Act, getting that passed.
Yeah.
And because of the Ice Bucket Challenge, and because it's something that people understand, we're getting good support from Congress, but it's not like we have even 50% of Congress on board yet. We really need to get everyone getting their voice in. So we encourage you to email us, go to ALSA.org, or if you're at our chapter level, ALSPhiladelphia.org. Get on Twitter, get on Facebook, sign up to be an advocate to get this passed. That's one of four things that are our priorities this year. And one thing that Ted and I, because since we've been, this is our fourth year, we've worked on a lot, is the ALS Registry Act, getting that funded more. And now we're starting to get some results from that. So that's a very promising piece that we're trying to get some funding for as well.
I love the ALS Registry. And I think there's a misconception. The ALS Registry has never been and will never be about a number. All right. The ALS Registry is about collecting the dots so that we ultimately can connect the dots. And I don't think we can connect those dots until we have them all. Right. So ultimately, we want to understand, is there a pattern here? Is there something that we can find out about root cause, something we can find about military, something we can find about history and environmental factors, where they lived, etc. There's a lot of great information in the registry from a module standpoint, the surveys that the patients can take. And from them, as they continue to collect this robust data, then researchers can access this, because this is an open registry that the researchers can use and say.
As well as the clinical directors.
Yeah, great.
Centers.
Absolutely, Barb, great point. You know, so if they have obviously they have to go through the gatekeeper, which is the CDC, and show they have, you know, legitimate research to be done. But if they do, then they could potentially take the information from this registry that patients are supplying and use that to identify a pattern, identify connections, which ultimately can lead to cause, treatment, and we all pray for a cure.
Well, like you were saying, Barb, you were during the Ice Bucket Challenge, and really since you started here and beyond, one of the missions of the ALS Association is to listen to patients and families. And we heard that we can't just be investing only for the cure that could be hopefully tomorrow, but maybe not for 10 years. But we have to invest in treatments now, and the registry can help with that.
Absolutely, because right now the CDC is doing 17 different surveys. And while that sounds daunting, when you go in and register, you don't have to do it all at one time. But that information is essential to looking at trends and patterns, and it can mean the difference on how we move forward in the clinical care of an individual with ALS, and certainly it can lead to somebody going, you know what, maybe we need to be looking at a drug that does this because of what we're seeing in terms of a trend. So it's just, it's extremely important that people do get registered, that they, and all they have to do, wherever they live, is call the chapter in the Philly area, call the Greater Philadelphia chapter, and have someone help you through that registration process.
Yeah, and it will also help with the chapters. Like you said, they'll know maybe through those surveys that more people than they expected need speech help. So
exactly.
Maybe the chapter should invest more in speech devices in the loaner closet. Or maybe there more people have need help with grasping things, or so there's more things that they should invest on a patient service level.
Yep.
And another thing is, we hear from a lot of patients, you know, I want to get involved in a trial. And I think this is still an undiscovered gem of this registry.
Oh.
Yeah, right, Barb?
Yep.
Is the fact that if you're interested in a trial, when you sign up, you can check a box that says, yeah, please communicate with me about trials that I may qualify for. Now we're getting the word out. The ALS Association, Barb and her team, the MDA and the CDC are getting the word out that, hey, neurologists, researchers, clinic directors, if you want to recruit participants for a trial, use our registry. You give us the data points, the parameters of what you're looking for. So if you're looking for, you know, women age 35 to 50 that served in the military, you send that to us, and we can identify those people, send it directly, email directly to them, and if they're interested in participating in your trial, they can email back to you directly, the researcher, and say, yes, I'm interested in participating in this trial. So what a great recruiting tool. It's a win for the patients. It's a win for the researchers.
Yeah, I think more than anything, what messages that we are trying to send is the CDC, the FDA, the Department of Defense, the ALS Association Chapter Network, the ALS Association as an organization, nationwide organization, along with all of the other ALS organizations, that we're in this together, and that we're going to have to move, that we are searching for the best pathways to find the most effective treatments right now.
So again, it's about listening and collaborating. Which I think to a lot of us is really is a really exciting thing. I know, Ted, from coming to a number of these conferences with you, hearing now about how much collaboration is happening is a real bonus, and knowing that the ALS Association is using the registry to connect with other organizations like MDA and others to say, we just want to get a cure. We just want to get a treatment. If we can get this to your clinical trial, great, let's get it done.
Yeah, I know that it's been interesting, because I know that people will often wonder about nonprofit organizations and what happens, what is the ALS Association looking at doing beyond a cure. Well, I'm here to tell you, we're in the business to put ourselves out of business. We want an effective treatment. We want to find the cause. We want to find the cure. And we want to go out of business. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I can't wait to collect that first unemployment check. I mean, I'm sure my wife won't be that thrilled for a couple minutes, but I think it'll be easy to get a job if you're with the ALS Association that ended ALS. Your resume looks pretty good there. So we want to pass the Steve Gleason Act. We want to pass the ALS Registry. We got a lot of supporters in Congress for that, so we want to get Dear Letter signed. And then the other thing we want to do is the ALS Research Project at the Department of Defense. Ted, you're a person with ALS. Are you a veteran?
No, I'm not, but I know plenty of friends.
My grandfather was a veteran with ALS.
Wow.
And I know a number of others.
Yeah, no, plenty of people. As a matter of fact, most of the studies show, Harvard has a paper out that says veterans are twice as likely to be diagnosed with ALS. And the great thing about the Department of Defense bill, well, ALS research plan, which is really an appropriation, I shouldn't use the word bill, is the fact that not only would it provide up to $10 million for additional research, but what I love about it, you know, a lot of times when we go visit with the congressmen and the senators, you know, they talk about they want to eliminate redundancy. well, the DOD plan here, it forces DOD and NIH and other organizations to communicate together to make sure that this is not redundant research. So it's a great a win for the government. It's a great win for the association. And most importantly, win for the Department of Defense. And so,
well, more importantly, veterans. It's a win for the vets and the ALS population.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I meant the Department of Defense, I meant from the standpoint they can provide this research out there to help their veterans that are, you know, literally dying from this service-related disease, ALS. Mm-hmm. So I, what we do every year is we go in and ask them to continue this funding for the ALS RP. And every year we ask for $10 million. And from that $10 million, they're able to get about 3 to 5 grant requests every year fulfilled. What's exciting is we learned today that there's now 4 drugs in the pipeline that all started because of funding they initially received from the ALS RP program. And that's exciting because you see something from its fruition. You know, we started doing this a few years ago. Obviously, the number was 0 of drugs coming from this pipeline. And here we are 5-6 years into this, and now we're at 4 drugs in the pipeline. Yeah, they're not ready to get out to the patient population yet, but we're making progress. We're moving the ball forward towards the goal line here of the treatments that Barb referred to and ultimately a cure. And when you see that progress, it gives me hope, and I know it gives other patients hope. But we have to ensure this doesn't happen without patients coming and advocating for it. It's their voices, it's their determination that causes this funding to keep coming back year after year.
Well, and I think the additional point that I want to stress from what you made is that the DOD has been very good about making sure that people that are reviewing this research, they're involving the ALS Association. Dr. Lucy Bruin is one of the key people involved with the DOD. So that by that kind of collaboration, once again, that word collaboration, we are able to take advantage and leverage dollars.
Yeah, and what's exciting too, hearing that, is that these drugs are being developed or being looked at in research. Like you said, it wouldn't have happened without that pipeline from the ALS DOD program. And that wouldn't have happened without people with ALS and their family members telling their stories.
Yeah.
Like, it's an end result of people just sharing their story, whether they be living with ALS or maybe they're a family member or a child even that told the story, especially about a veteran with ALS, that, yeah, it's making a difference.
Well, the other thing, too, that we all have to remember when we're in the research world is if you're giving money to ALS research, you're very likely going to help some of the other neuro diseases, like whether it's other muscular neuro diseases or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or MS. So it's really important that people understand that research dollars in this area will touch so many other diseases.
Yeah. Another great point, Barb. Yeah, absolutely. It's when you support this type of research, you're supporting a whole family of diseases that are unmet needs.
Yeah, my like I said, my grandfather passed away from ALS 8 years ago.
So sorry, Tony.
And and he wasn't as young as other people we see here. Not that it's good. It was very hard to watch for just the 2 years he had it. But on my mom's side, my mom has MS, and her mom had Parkinson's before she passed away from that. And yeah, I see a lot of the research stories with ALS end up. Sometimes the research that's being done is by the same companies that found drugs that my mom is taking.
And same researchers.
Mm-hmm. And or it goes the other way, where someone's doing an MS thing, and I go, they've done ALS. So that is very hopeful for me, because I've seen progress made for my mom. So before I go into our last priority, as I said, there's 4. The important thing, I think, there was that patient stories really made a difference. Barbie, you've only been here for around a year. You knew
I'm
ALS.
Starting to feel older than that, but yes.
you look younger than that.
Well, thank you.
I am talking with the president of the ALS. But you've been around all over the country. How have you seen these stories make a difference?
Oh, my goodness.
You don't have to list every example, because we don't have that much time.
No. These stories make an incredible difference. I was recently in a spot where I watched a young man who had a medical discharge from the military who was a bodybuilder in the military as a part of what he also did. I mean, he was as military, but he also did bodybuilding.
Right.
And for him
it's not
to
like we're
share,
sending bodybuilders.
Right.
Like,
for him to share his story, he is now, of course, in a wheelchair, and his limbs are very weak. But he's got quite a personality, however, Ted. He's like you. So, but to watch him share his story in front of a large a gala that I was attending, there wasn't a dry eye in the entire place. And immediately after sharing his story, I thought the beauty of it was he was very careful to also tell that he was sharing hope and that we had hope. And that was, over the past 10 days, I've been on a junket, so to speak, of chapter travel. And gosh, everywhere I go, there's a story like that. And so when I look at the Teds and the Davids and the other guy was Ted too. When I look at these gentlemen and ladies that are sharing their story, it reminds me how important it is that we use every precious moment of our lives and that we do this all with a sense of purpose and urgency, because these people have hope and we have to pour ourselves into it and make it happen.
No, that's... We should. I'm glad we got that on audio. We'll have that and make sure everyone hears that. It reminds me of what I talk about with our people who want to be first-time advocates. I said just three words: story, hope, and plan. You have a personal story, end it with hope, and then you got to tell them, here's what we need you to do. And it's really good to me. I think people don't realize, because their point of connection to the ALS Association is at the chapter level usually. And so you know your social workers and nurses, and you know that they are connected. But the staff here at National, they know so many of our patients firsthand. They see them as often as a clinic staff sometimes.
Yep. I think the other thing I just will say, my all the years I've been in nonprofits, it still holds true. If you don't ask, you don't get. And so when we're up on that hill, we have to ask in order to get it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that makes a difference is that the person who's asking has something powerful behind them.
That's right.
And it's, like you said, the listening part, that National's been listening to these stories as well, and it's driving the discussion. So we have one last priority, and that's the Dormant Therapies Act, ALS Cures. And we've been working on the Modern Cures Act for a while, which was spelled funny. My friend Leo had been working on it for a long time, for the couple years he was here before he passed away. And he got his congressman involved. So, Ted, tell us about, you don't have to go into all the details,
sure,
either Ted or Barb, because it can be a little bit complicated. But the main purpose here is that we want drugs to be developed faster.
Yeah, absolutely. So the bottom line is, there's a lot of drugs that originally maybe a researcher or a pharma company or bio company, they put a patent on. And they had an idea for potentially Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or you name it. And it didn't work. And that drug goes on a shelf, and it sits there, and it sits there. And then before you know it, it's been there for a decade, 15 years. And then the patent protection, the data exclusivity rights ran out. And no one's going to invest in that drug if they don't have some type of protection to get a return on their investment. So you have all these drugs sitting on shelves that may be the answer for ALS, may be the answer to cancer, may be the answer to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and MS. But we don't know. And we will never know unless we give these drugs a shot at getting off the shelf. And when you go ahead and get the Modern Cures Act, which is being now called the Dormant Therapies Act, thank you. And it's also being attached to the 21st Century Cures. When that bill gets passed, it's going to extend the exclusivity for these drugs that are for diseases with unmet needs like ALS. And when that happens, then a company looking to do research can say, hey, I have this idea. I can apply for this patent protection that has been given to me under this new bill and go ahead. Now I'll have 15 years after the drug gets approved by the FDA. So you know what? As an investor, to my stockholders, to whoever, it makes sense to invest in that drug now. So really, what, at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're incentivizing, the Congress would be incentivizing drug manufacturers, drug developers, researchers to take a second look at these drugs, give these drugs a chance for these diseases that have unmet needs. And I think that could be huge for the, you know, all these diseases with unmet needs.
Yeah, I think a lot of people hear it and they think that it's almost demonizing drug companies because they're like, well, we have to give them a patent so they can make money off it. But really, they're going to make a drug. So it's going to help somebody either way, right? Like whether it's for having, you have some bad pneumonia or something. Yeah. And or you're going to develop for ALS, and it's an expensive thing to do. So you're going to do one good thing or another. Yeah. Let's incentivize them to do these good things.
Well, we talked about the fact earlier, it could especially for diseases that are complicated like ALS is, it could take $1 billion to $2 billion. Well, if there's no protection for that company, then they're going to have to invest all this money in this drug. And basically, if it gets approved, anyone else can produce the drug as well off their research because there'll be no data exclusivity. So they wouldn't have the opportunity to really capture all the revenue potential there.
Well,
for a cure.
Just to recoup their costs.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
A billion dollars is
a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, and actually, you know, we talk about $1 billion to $2 billion because it's hard to fathom beyond that. But the new statistics that are out is that it's, and this came from Pharma, $2.6 billion
wow.
in 10 years.
Wow.
I know you know from doing some clinical trials, Ted. It's also hard to find the population to do the trials because ALS is such a complicated disease. And you need to give the drug companies and anyone that wants to do the research the time to be able to get all they need to get it off the ground.
And I think, if I can correct you on one thing.
Correct away.
It's a complicated grouping of diseases.
Yes.
Yes.
ALS is more than one. There's more than one form of ALS.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a spectrum. And I think that's the other thing that has been so challenging to pharmaceutical companies and to researchers is they may have a drug and they may test it out and it may work on one type of ALS and not so much on another. So we, again, through collaborating, we're going to be able to hopefully work through some of those issues doing it together.
That is so right and so crucial, Barb. Great point.
Yeah, I mean, I remember hearing even today there was the one drug that seemed to make a big difference to people that had, I think, the SOD1 gene, but there's people that have the gene that's TDP43 or C9orf72, you know, things that people talk about all the time. But maybe they don't know the genetic component for that person. So, yeah, it could be, and then maybe they have, it helps people with SOD1 who can't walk, but what about the people who can't talk? So, you wish that the disease was simpler so you could just focus it all on one thing.
Yep.
So those are our priorities. How should people get involved?
Well, they can get involved by signing up to become an advocate. And hopefully we'll also register to come to the Public Policy Conference, which begins on May
10th. Mother's Day this year.
Mother's Day, So spend time with your mother first.
You can spend time with your mother on Saturday even.
Yeah.
You can spend time with your mother on Saturday. You can probably even spend time on Sunday morning, depending on where you live. Get in on Sunday afternoon, and we're ready to start that conference at 3:30 Eastern time. And you know what? It's actually a very fun conference with a purpose. We got a lot to get done, but boy, I had the privilege of coming last year before I even started and watching people reunite and reconnect with one another. And there was such an energy in the air, such an energy. And I predict that this year that energy is even going to be greater because we've got so much hopeful stuff on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, I see Ted once, maybe twice a year, because I come to advocacy, and I think it's a great opportunity because I get to take ideas from other chapters. Like we have a kids letter at our chapter I got because I met people from the Connecticut chapter who do good work.
Yeah,
you get to find out that there's a lot of good stuff happening at the chapter level.
Well,
that
you could go to Georgia and visit Ted and go to this great pasta place for lunch where they do homemade pasta.
I'm sure my wife will be thrilled that I'm going away another weekend.
Well, bring her too. You know, I want to echo Barb's comments. You know, I think we talked a little bit earlier about hope. You mentioned it. Barb mentioned it. And, you know, a few years ago, look, we need a treatment. That's the reality. But a few years ago, even the word hope, I mean, it was a non-existent commodity in the ALS community. And there's a lot of buzz now. And you know, some of that is from the Ice Bucket Challenge. Some of that is because we're constantly identifying new genes. We're coming up with these new bills that we know will help. We know the registry is putting out more information. So there's a lot of positive developments happening. And I think it's an exciting time and a very hopeful time. I also want to say before we close off that, you know, I think it's great. The ALS Association, you know, I want to thank Barb for her leadership. She's, as she said now, she's almost here a year, about 10 months. And she talks about collaboration, but she doesn't talk about it. She walks it. She lives it. She makes it happen. All right. She's out there. She's heard the patients. She listens to the patients. And she says, you know what? We're going to make this happen. So when we talk about these great things, so the passion and enthusiasm that Barb has brought to the table has certainly gone down, you know, to the rest of the staff and to the chapters. And I think it's a two-way street. You know, the enthusiasm the patients have has flown up. And Barb's out in the field. She feels it and sees it and connects it, and she takes it back. And I think that the collaboration and the hope and the buzz, certainly we're lucky to have a leader that's helping to facilitate all of that. So we thank you for all your hard work, Barb. We're lucky to have you.
Thanks, Ted. But, you know, honestly, we're all in this together. It's going to take all of us. And I'm very proud not only to lead this organization, but I am proud that I have 39 chapters and who have great staff, great chapter leaders, and we're in it and doing it together. And on top of that, we've got a tremendous, tremendous volunteer base.
Yes, we do. Well, one last thing. So just tell me if I'm wrong. Does advocacy then end on May 12th after the conference?
No.
Are we done
no.
for the year? We get to go home?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you can't do that.
Of course not.
Advocacy is a year-round effort.
So we encourage people. We've had members of Congress come to our walks. We've had some visit our clinics. Obviously, state advocacy, that's a whole other topic. And we'll be talking with another executive director on another podcast about it. But definitely encourage people to stay involved with their member of Congress all year round.
Oh, absolutely. You should always go to your member of Congress and just, even if it's just a quick note, say, I wanted to update you about this. We met on this date, and I thought you might want to know about this. And thank, and also remember to keep thanking your member of Congress. And you can, as we learned today, you can easily do that through some of their staff. We should not ever overlook the people that work for our congressmen and senators, because they're smart, very bright people. And if you send them a thank you note on the weekend, they actually read those.
Well, just like you said, you listen to the staff at the chapter level and nationally. The member of Congress or the president of the ALS Association or the United States listens to the staff as well. So we want to make sure that people continue sending letters, sending emails, meeting at town hall meetings, going in district, being on social media, tweeting and Facebooking, everything to keep the advocacy alive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, patients coming and telling their stories is a very powerful message, and we need the patients to really come here and, you know, as we like to say, storm the hill and get the word out and get the message out and just tell their story from their heart. And that's the biggest impact. There's nothing that the association can do that's more powerful or more impactful than having a patient tell their story to their representative or senator.
Well, thank you, Ted, for your many years of doing this and the work you'll continue to do. Thank you, Barb, for being part of this and for the work you're going to continue to do. And thanks to the chapters and national staff for not just for setting up the advocacy days, but working hard all year long. And also, final thank you to all the really thousands of ALS advocates all over the country.
Well, thank you, Tony, for making this podcast happen.
Thanks, Tony. And thanks, Barb. We'll have to go out for another meal at Pasta Mess.
Absolutely.
Oh, great. Well, if I'm in Georgia, you can take me too.
All right.
Good. All right. Well, we'll see you all again soon. You can get involved with Advocacy Day at www.alsa.org/advocacy. You can help out on a chapter level at alsphiladelphia.org. Always find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. I think we have a Vine at ALS Philadelphia. Every way you can communicate, please do it, and let's keep the hope alive and work to defeat ALS.
Thank you.